And now I'm delighted to introduce my colleague, Jake Ward. Jake is Vice President for Innovation and Economic Development at the University of Maine.
Thank you, Senator Mearmont, Representative McCray, committee, members of the committee. As you can see today, it's been a great day to talk about the broad array of activities that the University of Maine is doing, and our University of Maine and our regional campus, UMaine-Machias, is doing throughout the state in this sector. My quick remarks are going to be focused on two things. One is, as a wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about our new initiative called UMaine Marine. If you can see my slide in the background, you can see that the acronym is Maine Aligned Research, Innovation, and Nationally Recognized Education. The idea here is, and this is a recent initiative by the Vice President of Research, Cody Varmaramian, at the University of Maine, is really to collect all the information that you're seeing here today and present a unified approach to our marine activities, and making sure that our constituents, our partners, our collaborators, our students see a front porch, a front door on how to get to the resources that we have in marine, and really align all the work that's going on by these my colleagues and their programs as a no wrong door approach. So feel free to contact anybody who's presented today, other resources that are listed on the UMaine Marine website, and rest assured that our expertise can help any community issues and problems, and that we're willing to align and bring resources to bear. Recognizing that the University of Maine, as many of my colleagues have said, is collectively the largest marine resource opportunity in the state. Not only our talented faculty staff, we have resources statewide, some of them have been mentioned, the Darling Center, et cetera, but we actually have footprint from Kittery to Fort Kent, whether it's through our extension offices or our research facilities. The Downeast Institute is a marine experiment station for the UMaine Machias. Our Center for Cooperative Aquaculture in Franklin is another site. So there's definitely something in your backyard. We also welcome you to tour any of those once we're back up and opening. And I think also it's important to recognize that our primary goal, our primary function, is working with students. And so the opportunities for students to get involved into the marine sector, whether it's commercially focused on some of the business and industry or the more science focused, the resource agencies, et cetera. I'd also like to note again that we have very, very strong relationships with the Department of Marine Resources and many action, many functions, and we see them as a very important partner in the whole marine sector. So really endorse and support Commissioner Kelleher and their programs. I think they're doing a fantastic job. That's the quick and overview of UMaine Marine. If anybody has any questions on that, I'd be happy to take those. But then I'd like to move on to an update on offshore wind, if folks would like to move forward on that.
Thank you. Do we have questions from the committee up to this point? I know where there's a lot of interest in offshore wind as well. This is an overall statement for everybody. I've always been so impressed with how student-focused, community-focused, it's the whole package that you offer, and very much appreciate it as a legislator who gets lots of questions from the community about what's going on in our ocean industries and as things are changing. So thank you for that. I don't see any questions, so please go ahead. Thank you.
Sure thing. I've got to switch my notes here, just 2 seconds. So as you hopefully can see in your background, I was going to give a quick update on our project, New England Aquaventus 1, which is the first floating offshore wind full-size turbine project to be located in the state designated test site south of Monhegan. It is a project that has been funded for several years through the Department of Energy Advanced Technology Demonstration Program. Just to recall how we started all this, that back in the 2008 timeframe, the state was seeing huge energy prices increase. Gas and oil were $4 a gallon. And it was recognized, still recognized, that Maine is one of the most heavily dependent states on imported fossil fuel. And so looking for both a way to stabilize our energy economy, create local jobs through the manufacturing, and protect the environment, the offshore, the Ocean Energy Task Force was formed by then the governor and came forward with recommendations on how to utilize the resources in the Gulf of Maine as an energy source while creating economic opportunity. Through a variety of legislative actions dating back to 2009, the state established the state designated test site off of Monhegan that was assigned to the University of Maine. And there's been several legislative actions leading up to the last session where the state moved forward with approving the power purchase agreement for this project. Again, the goals of the project are really to develop and evaluate the best technology to convert wind to energy that can survive in the Gulf of Maine and improve the capacity factor. Ideally, this is technology that can be built locally, not imported, so technology that will create jobs in the manufacturing, installation, deployment, and operation. The project also wants to very clearly understand the environmental interactions to help inform future siting and future operating parameters, and then also to model and evaluate the economics of renewable energy generation locally. Can it compete with electric prices? And can we establish local manufacturing jobs and to support not just a Maine project, but other projects in the Northeast? So the designated test site is off of Monhegan. It's established through state law, all state permitting, all state requirements, and specific to demonstration of floating offshore wind or other wave and tidal devices. The test site at South of Monhegan is a 2 by 1 square mile area, and it is limited, very important, it is limited to a maximum of 2 turbines. It is limited to the maximum of a 25 megawatt cable capacity, and therefore cannot be grown into a large commercial farm. There's also very specific requirements in the permitting on environmental baseline, environmental monitoring, and going forward, and then there is a full requirement for decommissioning and returning the site afterwards. The interesting thing again about the Monhegan zone and why it's important, it is a specific zone, lobster conservation zone, and the fishing is limited to the residents of Monhegan. So at a maximum, I think it's 17 people can be fishing there. So we have a great test site in the sense that there is, it's very controllable in use around that. And so we can work collaboratively with the environmental sector and the fishing community to best understand how these can work. Environmental and geophysical is a very important piece, and we started studying and analyzing that site specifically. Some would say it's the most studied site in the coast of Maine. Beginning back in 2010 through 2015, everything from fish, marine mammals, birds, bats, noise and vibration, electromagnetic fields, geophysical, terrestrial, aesthetics and visual, and cultural historic surveys have all been done on that site. That's all in preparation for permitting. We have not applied for those permits yet, as there are still updates happening. All of the studies have been publicly shared. They're available on our website. They're available on the Monhegan Energy Task Force website. So all the data on that is available to whoever wants to see it. The bigger news in the recent year, this past summer, we announced a partnership with a new developer, New England Aquaventus LLC, as the developer. That is if you've read it in the news, that is a joint venture between Diamond Offshore Wind, a subsidiary of Mitsubishi Corporation, and RWE Renewables, which is the second largest company in offshore wind globally. They both companies have energy and other types of footprints, both in the U.S. and internationally. The go-forward development activities are now the responsibility of New England Aquaventus, who is investing their own capital to complete the project. They're being in charge of permitting, construction, assembly, deployment, and ongoing operations. UMaine Advanced Structures and Composite Center continues with the design, engineering, research, development, and post construction monitoring. At a very high level, the schedule is still evolving. The major next steps are over this spring is marine surveys for the test site itself, where turbines will be anchored and the cable right away to shore. All that information then flows into the rest of our permitting activities, as well as NEPA. NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act. That's a federal initiative led by the Department of Energy to look at what the environmental, do an environmental assessment of what the project might have. And in order to continue to spend federal funding, you have to follow through with the NEPA activity. Once that is completed, then the rest of the schedule can be filled in. Hull construction ideally is going to start and would be done in, as previously talked about, doing at Mack Point in Sears Point. Also turbine erection, anchors are installed on the site, the cable is put in place, and then finally the turbines are assembled on hulls. That's all done on shore or near shore, and the final deployment is a floating turbine, as you can see in my background, is towed to the site and hooked to the anchors. The ideal situation right now is that's all done within an operational in 2023. But that schedule is highly dependent on the initial stages of permitting in NEPA. To support that, this is ideally a local construction project. The platform itself, the floating platform, the yellow section you can see in my background, is made of precast concrete segments that can be locally manufactured. It is basically the same technology used to build the bridge. If any of you have seen the Penobscot Narrows Bridge or the Sarah Long Bridge most recently, that's the kind of technology that's used there. The concrete components can be manufactured and assembled locally by construction companies. The whole hull is then put in the water and floated. The electric turbines are not made in the U.S. There is no manufacturer in the U.S. making these turbines or blades, so those are imported. Those arrive by ship barge and are installed in Searsport. The local construction jobs are then directly related to the manufacturing assembly, the tow out, the installation, and then ongoing operations and maintenance. That just like any other power plant, there's crew and staff that take care of these and make sure that they work. I think that is the very highlight. I will say that there are ongoing activities now in the hands of New England Aquaventus, outreach with local fisheries in the Monhegan area. We've had a long-term relationship with the Monhegan fishermen in discussing how this technology interacts with their fishing, and that they would have the opportunity to help develop the experimental fishing plans around there. Great demonstration activity. We also have since 2013, a regular communication with the folks in Monhegan. They established the Monhegan Energy Task Force to really have a communication vehicle with the project and to communicate to the public. We have scheduled weekly calls with Monhegan Energy Task Force and dating back to 2013.
Thank you very much.
That's my quick update, and happy to take questions.
Thank you. We do have a question from, and I just want to mention, remarkably, you're exactly on time, everybody. So now, thank you for that. Now we're about to go over. Representative Thorne.
That's me, Mr. Over. Thank you, fine. Madam Chair. Right?
Very good.
Mr. Ward, during your presentation, I didn't hear mention of return on investment. In other words, there has to be a cost package analysis of all those anchors and the boats to get the windmills out, and the cost for the windmills versus the amount of electricity that's generated from the final product back in, otherwise known as an ROI. Sure. Are you aware of any of those figures?
So we're doing extensive economic analysis of that right now. Some of the preliminary numbers that we have used in the CapEx, the cost to build this, are being used to, so let me just back up. The National Renewable Energy Lab, DOE lab, did an independent analysis of what the cost of floating offshore wind using this technology would be. And they have forecasted what it would be at a commercial scale, meaning at you know, 50 to 100 or more turbines, right? We will not be cost effective for a single turbine. A single turbine is not a scalable economic reality, but everything we learn from this single turbine, that's why the Department of Energy is funding it the way it is. It's looking at floating offshore wind as a national energy solution. So, and it was never presented to be economically viable on a single turbine. So the rough order magnitude is that this is going to cost $125 million. That still remains to be seen through competitive bids and contracts. But the targets for nationally for looking at floating wind is to be cost competitive with fossil fuel resources. And those targets are in the under 10 cents a kilowatt hour. The projects that the bigger projects with fixed bottom in Massachusetts are coming in the 6, 7, and 8 cents a kilowatt hour.
And if I may offer a follow-up to that.
Sure.
So at $125 million, roughly, I'm just wondering if this is moving forward to benefit Maine or who financially benefits from offshore wind if it's not anything that will turn any type of profit.
On this particular one turbine project?
No, on the overall scope of the end product. Is it something that Maine will generate revenue from in the end? And then the startup costs won't affect Maine. It'll only affect the investors, and Maine will reap the benefits of that? Or how does that work?
I'll try to parse those questions a little bit because I'm not sure exactly. I know where you're headed, but I'm not sure I know exactly. So number one is that the companies that manufacture the technology to be installed in the Gulf of Maine or installed in the Northeast or wherever they can be towed to would certainly have a profit motive to build and sell those things, right? Mm-hmm. So any company that's going to end up being in the construction deployment, whether they're a prime contractor or subcontractor, will have a profit motive, and that's where the jobs come from, right? Certainly, as in any commercial company, if there are investors, whether depending on what the corporate structure looks like, investors hope to make money. And so there, the NEAV is investing money now, not to make money on this project, but to look at future commercial operations, right? And then the university, through our licensing of the technology, would hope to see a revenue return on royalties that will go back into our research program and the operations of the university.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Hepler has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually, Representative Thorne had some of the same questions that I had about what are the benefits to Maine, to the University of Maine system. Also wonder, kind of carrying this globally, are there benefits? Can this technology be marketed globally? You see?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Representative Hepler. There are over 5,500 offshore wind turbines installed around the world, mostly in Europe, and they are largely fixed bottom turbines that have to be closer to shore. Floating is a vision that began about 10, 12 years ago, but is just starting to get traction around the world. There are a variety of floating technologies. Some are manufactured of steel, some are manufactured of steel hybrid concrete components. Our vision of the floating offshore wind that we are using is so that it can be manufactured in Maine and directly serve Maine populations and the Northeast. The floating allows it to be manufactured and towed elsewhere. As the rest of the world is exploring floating, each region, each area has specific dynamics based on the wind wave, ocean conditions, as well as the local economic development conditions. In some places, steel may be a more beneficial technology, or concrete, depending on what is already there. So, but around the world, floating is really starting to gain traction as the next gen because of the issues that, you know, have been brought up, that the further from shore you can get, the less interaction you have with other users who like to use nearshore. And it also allows you the flexibility to find installations that are not dependent on shallow water, where that's the only place you can install it. So around the world now, there are two or three technologies that are starting to gain traction. And our technology is recognized one of the top five technologies in development internationally and nationally.
Thank you. Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
Question? They're still dependent on cable, right? Or is that
okay? Yep. So yeah, floating, they need anchor lines and they need electric cable to shore. But even if we're talking 20 to 40 miles of electric cable, when you look at power transmission lines all over the state, all over the country, many of those lines exceed that length by hundreds of miles.
Thanks.
Thank you. And Representative Falkingham has a question.
Sure.
Yes. I was, am I, okay, yeah. I was just making sure I'm all on. I was wondering if you could tell me, just to confirm for me, what is the size of these proposed windmills? What is the height and size of these proposed windmills?
Yeah, if you can just give me a minute to get to that slide. I have the dimensions on another slide. Final sizes are yet to be determined because it all depends on the final turbine size. We are talking about a 10 megawatt class turbine, which is really a 9 to 11 and a half megawatts. The size of the, sorry, I'm trying to read this at the same time, fine print. The diameter of the blade, the swept area of the blade, the circle of the blade, if you can see my background, is 569 feet. The hub height from the water line is 367 feet. The platform itself is in diameter. So those are three piling, those, each one of those columns, I'm sorry, I keep sending, making a circle, there's three of them. That in diameter is about 300 feet, 300, a little over 300. Do I have it on this diagram? I think it's 330. Sorry, I can get pretty technical. So 311 feet is the current design. The height above water, the platform above water, the yellow part in that diagram is about 45 feet above the water. And the part below the water is about 66 feet. Yep. Does that give you the?
It does. That I was just confirming that was the size, because that was the size that I thought you guys were proposing. So I just wanted to make sure it wasn't smaller or larger than that.
I just want to caution, those were sizes that I shared at the Fisherman's Forum last year. So that presentation is on the Fisherman Forum's website still, and that has all the schematics. There will be some refinement of that. I don't think it's going to be considerably bigger than that. There's just some refinement to that, those diameters that will be in the, maybe in the less than 10% range or so.
Okay. I just wanted to, while we were on the subject,
yep, just that's fine,
give the committee and everybody else a sort of a reality of the size of these towers. And just to put it in perspective, that tower just to the turbine part, not counting the 570 foot span of the blades, but just to the turbine, is 100 feet higher than the Statue of Liberty.
With the
blade spinning, it's twice the height of the Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty is 300 feet high.
I would just, to give you a very good local visual, the hub height is about the same height as the observatory of the Penobscot Narrows Bridge.
Okay, that's very good. That's a very good description for people that have been across that bridge. And and just to put one other thing in perspective that I want people on the committee and people listening to know, I just went to a quick horizon calculator, and an object 400 feet high can be observed for 44 miles. So this is the ocean, there's no obstruction. So that view, though, anything within 400 feet high would be observed for 44 miles, just to put it in perspective. So I just wanted to point those things out while we were on this subject, because I think people have trouble a lot of times visualizing, they may have seen a windmill at, that people have had and think it's this tiny little thing. These proposed windmills are massive skyscrapers. And I just wanted to make sure that we were talking about the same size. So thank you for that.
And I would just add, if people are interested in the visualization studies that were done, those are posted on the Monhegan Energy Task Force website, and they are visualization simulations. There's nothing like the real thing, but the simulations are from the Pemaquid Point Lighthouse. So you can get a sense of what that looks like from about 14, 15 miles away.
Thank you. And one question, and then we'll move on. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I actually want to follow up real quickly on what Jake Ward just said, and then also a question Representative Falkingham had, but then I have my own question. So when you refer to 330 feet, is that the circumference of the base of the turbine or the circumference between the anchor points?
That's the circumference of the base of the turbine.
And now you are doing, I understand UMaine is doing some testing on what the circumference of the anchor points will be based on different mooring system technologies?
Right. The base mooring system is a steel chain catenary load. The chains drop down and then run out to the anchors. That's really dependent. The length of those is really dependent on the where the anchors can be put into soft. Our new, we've got a new grant that starts to look at synthetic moorings. Synthetic moorings are synthetic materials that were designed for the offshore oil and gas industry for anchoring floating platforms. And we believe that the goal of that is to be able to shorten up the mooring lines to a point where we can reduce the footprint that's on the bottom from out from the diameter of the platform itself.
Excellent. I'm sure we'll all be looking forward to the results of that study. My question was, could you talk a little bit about the education benefits to University of Maine if this technology is successful? What might that bring as far as programming and education to the university?
Well, I would say for sure that one of the requirements in our power purchase agreement is to develop education and training programs in partnership with the Community College and Maine Maritime Academy, as well as university, to educate. Actually, there's a whole range of folks that could talent that needs to be supported in this industry, from the early stages of environmental assessment and permitting. The types of students that are working in all the programs we heard earlier are certainly, there are career opportunities in those types of consulting and monitoring companies. The design and engineering components, modeling both in structures, electrical computer engineering, all of that activity, there's jobs. The deployment, working with Maine Maritime, there is both deployment and operation and maintenance. Working at sea, they have a new offshore training center that would be greatly aligned with working mariners to be upgraded their skills for these types of operations. And then even just in the construction side itself, as we start looking at, and I want to say that this system is designed, as I said, precast concrete, but it's like Lego blocks. So big Lego blocks that have to be assembled, and all the construction jobs that are needed for that will bring additional workforce training opportunities. We've already been in discussion with some of the different trade organizations about how to reach out to fulfill those needs. And then there's also an effort to start developing the supply chain. So New England Aquaventures has already had workshops on companies who would perform certain components of this.
Great, thank you. Thank you everyone from UMaine, all the programs that were generous enough to share their time with us today. And we'll hope for some tours. We've been able to do that in the past with the committee and we'll hope to do that again. And as other questions come up, we'll be calling you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And see you back here in just a few minutes.